What goes into making the Business Daily podcast from the BBC World Service?
Well, first we take a cupful of business news.
Naturally.
Then we add a healthy measure of technology. Along with a pinch of exciting innovation.
Business Daily from the BBC World Service. Find out more at the end of this podcast.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Welcome to Moneybox Live, the podcast about your money. The very sharp rise in inflation is causing huge problems for millions of people who are having to make very difficult decisions about what they spend their money on and where to make cutbacks. A recent market report claims that 20% of gym members are thinking of cancelling their membership if forced to make savings. Another says that 18% of parents can't afford to buy football boots and other equipment their children need to join grassroots football teams. But even if you give up your gym subscription, it doesn't mean stopping exercising or staying fit. Cheaper public facilities, free access sports and home alternatives can all fill that gap. Well, in this Moneybox podcast, we're looking at the finances of staying fit. Stephen Scales is from UK Active. That's a body which tries to promote better health through exercise and activity and represents the companies in the industry and joins us now. Stephen, we hear a lot about the very quick rising cost of food and energy in particular. Do you have any sense of what has happened to the cost of keeping fit, the cost of swimming, gym membership, fitness classes and all of that?
Yeah, a good question. The industry itself, its core responsibilities is to improve people's health and well-being and making sure that people have the ability, no matter what age or background or ability, they've got the ability to be able to do that and sustain it. Where possible, the sector itself, our member base, have tried to keep prices as low as possible. There hasn't been any dramatic increases to make sure that people can actually take part in exercise. And that's been a key driver for our industry as we come out of the pandemic.
Right. So, I mean, is it your sense that you're keeping below the sort of national inflation figures or above it, or you're just not sure?
No, definitely. It is currently below the national inflation figures. And to lay that in a level of context, Adam, is it was a sector that was quite poorly supported by government over the period of time, but still taking that responsibility and that moral high ground to make sure that prices can be kept as low right. as possible to make sure that the services can be sustained.
Well, on that point, there is lots of government talk and talk from all sorts of bodies about the importance of mental health and physical health and how, indeed, it can save everyone money in the long term if we look after these things in the short term. Is there any sense of government financial help out there to help sort of your members actually keep the costs lower?
Well, I think from a policy perspective, there are varying levers that could be pulled, looking at the ageing stock in the public sector, looking at VAT and other regulatory levers that could be pulled by government. But the first area that we would essentially call on the government is political will. And it's showing that leadership and the responsibility that it is prioritising the nation's physical activity and what that can do to solve inequalities. And I think that's an important place to start.
Right. And in a word, have they got that political will?
We're working with them to put that higher on the agenda.
Okay, that's a very political answer. You should be a politician. Thank you very much. Let me introduce Phil Wright, who's from the Chartered Institute for the Management of Sport and Physical Activity, which also represents the industry, but more a concentration on the workers in that industry. Phil, welcome to the programme. How badly hit has the sector been by the price rises that have been introduced and the fact that people seem to be cutting back on actually their subscriptions?
Yeah, good afternoon, Adam. So I would say that it's absolutely been hit. And obviously, like the rest of the economy, it's come at a time where we're still trying to just get back on our feet following COVID. And I can sort of fully relate with what Steve's mentioned around the lack of support for the sector, you know, particularly over the last couple of years. I would say we're still in a situation where we're figuring that out. And I think we've not seen the full extent of the impact of the rising energy costs at this moment. But I think certainly, you know, by October, November time, that's going to be a very different situation, particularly as those costs ramp up even further.
And briefly, I mean, I think during lockdown, people did become more aware of the importance of staying fit and staying active. Do you think that will stay with us?
I think so. I think, you know, it's debatable as to sort of how well leadership was from the government throughout COVID. But I think going back to that very first messaging, if you sort of remember back to the very early stages of COVID, where it was stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives, and do your exercise, was pretty much the fourth message. And I think that really went quite far into the public perception of the level of value that we should all have on staying active. Because as you say, it's not just the physical fitness side that is the real benefit. You know, this impacts mental well-being, for many social well-being, because for many, actually participating in sport or physical activity is a real social element to their day or their week. And also emotional well-being as well. So the benefits of staying active and staying healthy and fit are incredibly far-reaching and allow us to function effectively as humans. You know, you probably all heard the phrase, your health is your wealth. And that, you know, by remaining healthy, we're able to do our jobs, earn a living and function.
All right. Well, Phil, that very neatly introduces our next guest who joins us on the line. Kirsty Bowden is from the organisation Sport in Mind. Welcome, Kirsty. Can you just briefly tell us a little bit about your organisation, what it does?
Hi, Adam. Yeah, of course. So Sport in Mind is a mental health sports charity with a very simple mission, which is to help improve the lives of people who are experiencing mental ill health through sport and physical activity. So we provide weekly sessions, which are entirely free. They are provided with all the equipment and the qualified coach and the venue. And anybody who is experiencing mental ill health, whether that be adults, for our adult program, we have a children and young persons program, and also a small pilot project for mum and babies. So anybody who is experiencing mental ill health can drop down to our sessions and join in and have some fun.
And that's for free?
That's for free, yes.
And sorry, because I think a lot of people will be interested in that. Do you have a medical diagnosis of trouble, or can you present with anxiety and those sorts of issues, which are very real, but may not have a medical name and may not be diagnosed by your GP?
Absolutely, Adam. So our service is available for people who are, have severe and enduring mental health conditions, but absolutely, you know, the number of sort of GP diagnosis for anxiety, depression, and they're being prescribed activities. So we do have a wide range of individuals, and we do not need a healthcare referral. We can receive them, but people can self-refer, and we just ask for a very sort of brief declaration of their physical health and also their mental health, so that we can keep them safe.
Wonderful. And no doubt, if people are interested in more details about that, they can find that online, and the organisation is Sport in Mind. We've already talked about the importance of mental health. I don't want to spend too much time on this because we want to talk about the finances of it. But there is proper evidence that physical activity sort of is helpful in our mental well-being. That's correct, is it?
Absolutely. And I think just in the ways that it helps and is beneficial, you know, there's lots of evidence around it reduces stress, or it helps us to cope better with those daily life stresses and make better decisions. It improves our mood, you know, when the endorphins are flowing through the body, it's feel-good hormone. When we achieve that bit of activity, whatever that might be, whatever level it is, the dopamine kicks in. So you've got that sort of reward and achievement. And in terms of the sort of depression and anxiety, but also other mental health conditions, you know, it helps to manage the symptoms. And then in terms of doing more activity, we are energised, so we want to do more. And then by doing more and more, we kind of have better sleeping patterns. So kind of generally, mental health and physical health, it all just ties in.
Understood. Well, you clearly outlined some free options through your own organisation. But for everybody, do you have a sense of if you can't afford to go to the gym, if you can't afford to sign up for classes, what other options are there for everyone for free?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the reference to during lockdown, I think a lot of us have more lived experience of finding things in our local community, in our local area that are free and accessible. So, and I'd just suggest and encourage people to be quite creative. So we're more likely to do something if we're enjoying it and it's good fun, you know. And so the challenge of not having enough time or not having enough money or not having the motivation. If we actually genuinely enjoy what we're going to do, we're more likely to do it. So I think out in the community, I think walking, jogging, cycling, you know, very, very accessible, available to everybody. You can do it in different ways. So some people would like to walk on their own and listen to a podcast or listen to the radio or music. Some people like to do it in groups, and bringing in that social aspect is really important, as we were saying earlier, because it really does help the connection and combat that isolation that for a couple of years a lot of people have sort of, you know, struggled with. So I think there's lots of things out in the local community. There's outdoor gym equipment, you know, table tennis tables are in local parks, and there's plenty of sort of options outdoors. And then there's often a lot of things online. You know, I think through lockdown, a lot of us probably took part in one of the school Joe Wicks exercise videos, and just doing lots of things like that. There is lots of things available that are free and accessible to us all.
That's right. I mean, to be honest, I often look up sort of easy exercise classes on YouTube with a bit of music, and I close the curtains so the neighbours can't see, and I sort of jump up and down. It's a bit of exercise, but a bit of fun, and of course, free. Kirsty, thank you very much indeed for that, and best of luck with that project, which sounds really super interesting. Now, we've been looking at sort of what are the options for us individually, but to take a step back for a moment, the market research group Mintel have been looking at the financial health of the excise industry itself, and Paul Davies is their category director for leisure research.
Clearly, COVID was a disaster for the gym market and indeed any sector that relies on people leaving their home. But one big silver lining for the fitness market was that people really started to prioritise exercise more than they had before to boost their physical and mental well-being. So a big trend we saw was that not just that people were working out or exercising more often, but also that they were doing it at locations that they'd never done before. So more people took up running and cycling, and also people invested in home exercise equipment and did more home workouts. And I think that's both an opportunity and a threat for the gym market. So, you know, people are more engaged in exercise than they ever have been before. They, you know, health and well-being is a key concern to consumers now. But they're also more familiar with cheaper and free forms of exercise that perhaps they hadn't done before the pandemic.
Do you have any sense of the value of the market or the average amount we spend on keeping fit?
Before the pandemic, the value of the private health and fitness club market was just over £3 billion. And now that recovered to more than £2 billion last year. Didn't fully recover because of the restrictions at the start of the year, of course. But we had projected that the market would recover to its pre-pandemic level in the next couple of years. But that's now a serious threat because of consumers having to make hard decisions. Mm.
So that's £3 billion a year we're spending on keeping fit.
That's a private health and fitness club. So if you include leisure centres, it's closer to £5 billion and more.
And do you have any sense of who's actually spending the money? Is it, I mean, the sort of stereotype, isn't it? It's young people going out keeping fit. But is that correct? Is it perhaps the older age groups who are now maybe having the money to spend and the need to keep fit?
So, I mean, the typical market is still 16 to 44-year-olds that actually go out and spend money in fitness venues. But it's also a relatively affluent crowd, and I think that will that does clearly bode well for the sector at the current time. It doesn't mean that price rises will go unnoticed, but I think that, you know, gyms are clearly under pressure to keep maintain their current price levels or enhance their service level to deliver good value for money and to convince consumers to stay.
Can you give me a sense of what the latest numbers, the latest insight into market trends are here?
Yeah, so when we ask people what they're most likely to cut back on if they were forced to make savings, it's actually leisure activities and dining out that people say that they would be most likely to cut back on. Around 44% of consumers say that, and actually one in five say they would cut back on gym memberships and other subscriptions. So, yeah, clearly the sector is at threat at the moment.
Well, that was Paul from Mintel. Phil, he thinks problems coming down the line for your industry. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think we absolutely are quite a vulnerable sector. And I think part of it is that we're not particularly well paid. That is a real challenge. Just looking at the frontline roles. So with frontline, I'm talking about sort of instructors or coaches or personal trainers, people who directly deliver services or support participants. You know, the average pay for frontline roles is just over 23,000, which, you know, compared to other sectors and industries, it's not particularly great, and it puts us in a really vulnerable space.
Yes, well, of course, we've been talking about the financial impact on gym users, but of course we've forgotten the people who work in those gyms. I mean, they've just presumably, a large amount of those self-employed, they've probably had quite a torrid time of it during COVID.
Yeah, so again, you know, that's another sort of vulnerability, is that I think just over 13% of our entire workforce are self-employed. And if just looking at frontline roles, so going back to instructors and coaches, about 20% of those are self-employed. You know, again, extremely vulnerable because they just don't have that job security. So, you know, all decision making around their costing, their pricing models, and trying to sort of reduce their outgoings falls on them to make those decisions. So I do think there's real challenges there. And, you know, that is being recognised. Just recently, Sport England have invested £5 million worth of support to try and retain and keep hold of those most vulnerable, you know, in our sector, to whether that's through retraining or just support or purchasing additional resources.
All right, brilliant. Well, let's move on to another caller. A tip now from Angela for a way to keep fit on a budget.
Well, parkrun's great because it's open to everyone and it's always free of charge. And I first heard about it through my daughter. And I didn't think I'd like running with lots of people and using a barcode, but it turned out to be completely different from what I expected, really fun and friendly. And I've now done nearly 300 park runs. I started about nearly 8 years ago, and you can do it anywhere you like. But if you're travelling or visiting somebody, you can just use the same barcode and turn up at any other park run. There are some people who are very fast and there are some people who are very slow. Some people push the baby in a pushchair. Some people have their dog on a lead. And it's all staffed by volunteers. Everyone takes it in turn to help and do different roles. It's 5 kilometres and it starts at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. But the volunteer who makes sure that the very last person is okay, this role used to be called tail runner, bringing up the rear, but it's been renamed as tail walker, which reflects the fact that some people are going quite slowly and even walking, not running.
I have to say, I have a lot of sympathy with the Dale Walker. I think that's me. Last time I did a park run, I was frothing at the mouth. And people came up to me asking me if I was all right. Anyway, so yeah, walking or running, all very good. So Angela, thank you very much. Stephen from UK Active. Now, look, this was a big thing. It is a big thing, these park runs. I understand they're controlled by councils. And I heard that a lot were cancelled because of council cutbacks. Is that something you know has been happening on a national scale? And if so, is it coming back?
Not that we're aware of on a national scale, is that as was the core role and responsibility of any local authority is looking at how they instill community in their district, borough, metropolitan area. So we're not necessarily hearing that currently. And I think it's important that people's ability to access green space, people's ability to be able to access facilities is key moving forward. I think one area just, I suppose, to pick up on that, though, is that councils oversee the open spaces, but also the physical leisure centres, your local swimming pool, so on and so forth. And looking at central government support of local government is quite key moving forward. Broadly, those facilities operate at a break-even perspective. They are already heavily subsidised, and that central government to local government finance is quite a critical area moving forward to make sure that all services can be sustained.
Right. OK, thank you very much. Let's go on now to another caller, Joe. Joe, welcome. Tell me a bit about your experiences of keeping fit on a budget.
Yeah, so my main sport is swimming, so that's in a pool and also outdoor swimming. Mm-hmm. And with the, you know, swimming membership in a pool is kind of quite self-explanatory. Outdoor swimming is I like saying it's technically free because, you know, if you're swimming in a river or the sea, there's no cost to that. However, once you've added petrol, the kit you need, and if you're going to a lake or a private space or swimming, it can get quite interesting in terms of cost.
Right. In what way is it interesting in terms of cost? What does that mean?
Because if you're driving half an hour or to the river or an hour down to the beach, suddenly when petrol goes up, that becomes interesting. If you're spending, £6-7 getting to the lake, which is a really reasonable cost considering the facilities, but that can easily be £15-20 a week. So what am I doing to curtail that? It's car sharing where I can. It's balancing places I can swim for free and places I can swim pay for with safety teams to make sure that I keep it below a certain allowance.
Right. I mean, and also, I suppose if you're wild swimming, one also there's a safety issue here because you're swimming in the wild. There's not a lifeguard there or anything, so one has to be careful.
That's the reason why, with the paid for spaces, you get the additional benefit of safety. So you have to balance that as well. And then with pool memberships, I made the decision to cancel my membership because I didn't want the regular outgoing.
Right.
It was unpredictable.
And am I right in saying you actually got a swim teaching qualification?
Yeah, the other thing I do is me and my family, we decided to make sure hobbies have a pot. And I'm very fortunate that I'm a qualified swimming teacher and outdoor swimming instructor. I went, right, I will only spend what I make because then it kind of pays for itself as a hobby.
Right.
And I would not be able to do the sport I do without paying for it via the hobby of it.
But that's also quite interesting budget, just as a budgeting tool, really, to create pots, either physical or virtual ones, where you put, I'm going to put that money in to my hobby, to my passion, to keeping fit and healthy. So that's quite an interesting way forward. Have you found that actually a useful way of controlling the budget?
Absolutely. One, it helps because a lot of leisure centres will give you, if you just say you teach them enough, a certain number of hours a week, and sometimes that's evenings or Saturday mornings, so it can work around a full-time job. They give you a free membership, so that saves the money there, and then you get extra kit money for that. And I use Monzo, so I put it in a pot, and then I've just got a little different folders in my bank account for what I can spend.
Monzo do that. Starling do that as well. I think that's an increasing sort of facility you'll see on a lot, especially of the app banks, but even the more traditional ones. Look, a really good idea, Joe. Thank you very much, and I hope you have fun and safe swimming adventures. Well done. Let's go back to Stephen actually, because I just want to get a very quick response on that about the cost of swimming, because we may be coming on to this because a lot of people contacted us about swimming. That it can be expensive, and this sort of sense, well, look, are these swimming centres actually profiteering from what can be a rather expensive pastime?
It's really quite the opposite, to be honest with you, Adam, is that broadly, the average price of a swim currently is around £5 across the UK, and are already, on a public basis, already heavily subsidised. The true cost of a swim, when you factor in lifeguard time, wider facility costs, heating the pool, is nearer £8. Now, as we start to see sort of wider society at the moment, is that 150% increases in energy. It's very, very difficult for operators to be able to keep that price down as low as possible, although they're fighting hard to make sure that they are able to do that to make sure it is accessible to everyone. And I suppose to round that point off, really, is broadly your public leisure facility will operate at a break-even position. They are broadly not-for-profit organisations.
Right. And on that point, is it a regulated industry? I mean, can they charge whatever they want to charge, or are there some sort of limits?
No. From a public sector perspective, the pricing will be ultimately signed off ordinarily by the local councillors, the council cabinet, who will set that pricing with a view of making it accessible to the general public. So there's a level of, I suppose, the councillors as elected members, there's the opportunity for the public to influence that.
Okay. All right. Well, we've had loads of emails on this, so let's go to some of those. Still time to share your thoughts if you want to email us at moneybox@bbc.co.uk. But we've had this from Corrine. I currently pay £41 per month for my local gym. It does include loads of classes, two swimming pools and squash. So a pretty good deal from where I live. The membership was £40 per month and saw a £1 increase this year. So, I mean, it sounds relatively expensive, but a £1 increase is roughly 2.5%, a quick bit of mental maths. So that's much below the sort of headline rate of inflation. Jamie has emailed to say, I spend Sorry, I spend £125 a month for gym membership. I go every day, so it does work out good value. £50 every 3 weeks or so for a chiropractor, £50 every month for a nutritionist, and the gym is 30 minutes away. So I suppose there's a time and fuel cost, but absolutely worth it. I put it over everything. I've never felt better physically and mentally. Ruth emailed in to say she too is a swimmer. We've got lots of swimmers. About £5 a session. Used to be pay as you go. Interesting here, if we're looking for money saving tips, she's now switched to a subscription, which seems to work out cheaper. So if you are a swimmer and you're finding it expensive, do inquire about those subscription rates. And she reckons that way she means she's going to earn her money back, actually, because she does two or three swims a week. Richard Burton got in touch. The answer is obvious, he says. Ride a bike. Regular cyclists are fitter, healthier and slimmer than average. For many people, it would be easy to transfer their current commuting car trips to a bicycle, which would save them considerable amounts of money, and they'd be reducing local and global pollution as well. Given the overwhelming benefits of cycling individually, locally, nationally and globally, I'm sure you'll be featuring it heavily, he says. Well, I don't know if we're featuring it heavily. We're featuring it, I understand. I mean, also, I find actually cycling in town rather nerve-wracking and rather aggressive from everybody. So, but there are health benefits if you can do it safely. Stephen Scales, is there any control on what councils can charge for their sports services? Well, we sort of answered that. Phil, a lot of trainers moved online during the lockdown. Is that a permanent move, you think? So that's a really interesting one. So, Phil, let's start with that. This sort of digital gym membership.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Joe Wicks was mentioned earlier in the call, and, you know, he didn't start it, but he certainly raised the profile for any of our services within the sector being available digitally and remotely. I don't think it's a permanent switch in the full-time sense, but I do know that a lot of trainers, given that sort of we're largely out of the restrictive aspect of COVID, are continuing to deliver a component of that as part of their service. And I think that's one point worth bearing in mind is both facilities, so gyms and leisure facilities in some instances, and many coaches are still offering flexible services, including remote options. And I think just going back to
and that's going to be cheap. Sorry, because we're running out of time. But the key point here is digital gym membership must be much cheaper, surely.
Absolutely. But it's what I would emphasise is just that safety aspect and always putting that at the heart of your decision making. It's easy to look for a cheaper option, but it's important to make sure it's safe. And from our perspective, one of the great ways of doing that is making sure that the coach or the instructor is qualified. And by looking for a SIMSPA kite mark next to their name, you can be sure that they are.
Okay, got it. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Moneybox. Well, I hope you enjoyed that Moneybox Live podcast. The programme is broadcast every week at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays, and there's more information and details about how to contact us on our BBC Moneybox website. We tweet at Moneybox, and if you want us to look into something for you, do email us at moneybox@bbc.co.uk. The producer was Drew Hindman, and I'm Adam Shaw. Now, here's the team from the Business Daily podcast explaining why you should never judge a book by its cover.
Hi, I'm Sam Fenwick.
And I'm Rahul Tandon.
And we present Business Daily from the BBC World Service.
Question for you, Sam. What is Business Daily?
Well, Rahul, it's all about business, but so much more. We talk about money, work, the office, technology, the global economy, big policy issues, the environment.
Yes, so never judge a book by its cover or by its name in this case, because Business Daily is the place to find out about all sorts of exciting things affecting our lives from the world of business and beyond.
Yes, in recent programmes, we've explored the possible end to face-to-face job interviews.
Ooh, I like the sound of that. No need for me to iron any more shirts.
And what about urban mining, whether recycling used electronic goods can help save the planet and make us less reliant on traditional mining?
I've got loads of old phones. I'll happily donate them, Sam.
Absolutely, me too. Business Daily from the BBC World Service. Search for Business Daily wherever you found this podcast.